Hello, and welcome to episode 149 of Church in Maine, the podcast that is at the intersection of faith and modern life. I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. This is a special episode where we kind of, every so often, I bring along Lauren Richmond Jr. He's been on a few times, and we kind of talk every so often about what's going on in the news. And so recently, he came on to the podcast, and we talked a little bit about some of the major things happening, especially with Pride Month and sports. And we talked a little bit about what's going on with DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we talk about the role of women as pastors, especially in light of what recently happened at the Southern Baptist Convention. So I hope that you will enjoy this episode. And Lauren is a pastor ordained in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. He is also the host of the Future Christian podcast, and he also is a part-time pastor at a United Methodist congregation in the Denver area. So, without further ado, here is my interview and discussion with Lauren Richmond Jr. It's good to have you back here again.
Thanks.
So I thought we'd talk about some things that are happening in the news as of late. Mm-hmm. June, as both of us know, is we're kind of finishing up. Never know if it's Gay Pride Month or LGBTQ month or whatever you want to call it month, but that is finishing up. It's kind of interesting to see how things in our culture have really changed and in the last few years. And I think one of the things that I found was interesting, you had tweeted a while back, was a controversy happening with the LA Dodgers. And that for several years, of course, they have had hosted a Pride Night. And most times you didn't hear about it, went on without very much of a hitch. This year it caused a lot more of a stir, and partially because it was who was being honored, and that was the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, which is kind of a troupe, LGBT, mostly gay men in drag. And if you are think about it, it's basically in a very kind of outrageous kind of nun's habit kind of thing. But that caused a lot of controversy. And you were talking about the need in this issue, in this specific issue, about nuance. Could you kind of explain where you were going with that and what you are thinking?
Yeah, let me first say, like, I'm a big baseball fan, or a big sports fan, really, in general. And Pride Nights have really been a source of controversy for the last few years. You know, really, that pendulum has kind of swung back societally. Like, the Tampa Bay Rays, the baseball team, some players pushed back against a Pride Night there. I think this was a couple of years ago. Last 2 years, a lot of NHL teams have been reticent. Players have been reticent about wearing Pride Night themed kind of warm up jerseys. So it's really been interesting. Here in this situation, again, as a baseball fan, the Dodgers hosted this night, and we're going to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, I think it was. And Clayton Kershaw, he's one of their star players, been with the team a long time. I don't know Clayton Kershaw real well just because I don't follow the Dodgers that closely. But from my understanding, he's fairly conservative Christian And he was kind of bothered, if I can say that term lightly, by, you know, their presence. For those who don't follow the story, the Dodgers had invited them, got some pushback, then rescinded the invitation. Then after getting pushback from the other side, essentially re-invited them. And then, so Clayton Kershaw had a kind of innocuous statement about, you know, I don't think it's nice to make fun of, I don't remember the word he used exactly, but something to that extent, others' religion. I think like someone like Ed Stetzer, you know, the Baptist, wrote an article kind of against kind of the thing. And, you know, it was very kind of the typical of people taking people running to their sides, right? Of like, well, you know, if we do anything against LGBT persons, like, we're hateful bigots. And conversely, like, if we're doing anything that would like denigrate religion, we hate religion and think God is, you know, worthless. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but I've been kind of fed up of late with this kind of extreme polarism, especially from like camps that I associate with, because I just feel like we're smarter than that and should know better than that. So I said something to like, you know, I can understand that, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence have been a great support and resource for a lot of LGBT people. So I can see why folks would honor them. I can also see why folks who are Catholic or in that context might not love their kind of their shtick. And I don't remember, I said a couple things, but like I can see like the nuance in both sides. I can see like that, you know, the church has caused folks in the LGBT spectrum a lot of harm, a lot of pain. They've had a lot of negativity going their way. But also like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily love if, I don't know, someone came out and like danced in a bunch of like, I don't know, clergy robes, for instance. I wouldn't necessarily like love that either. So I just found like there's a lot of nuance, and I feel like societally, if we could just like kind of stop running to our own teams or sides or whatever and recognize nuance, we might actually get some more things accomplished and find some common ground. But I think, you know, the way that things are set up right now in some ways, like we're rewarded and we gain attention for those kind of hot takes and extreme polarization efforts.
Yeah, you know, this also reminds me that I think maybe was it earlier this year that there was some controversy more than once with hockey.
Yeah,
there were some Pride right. nights that happened. And I know in one occasion it was a hockey player that I think he was Russian Orthodox and just, mm-hmm. I mean, it sounded like he was very pleasant about it. He wasn't being mean or being mm-hmm. anything. He just said, I just don't agree. And some sports journalists were just really angry about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, you know, I'm, as someone who is gay, it's great to see things in sports, I think, be a little bit more tolerant mm-hmm. Of LGBTQ populations. However, I also know, or at least sometimes scratch my head, because not everyone is there.
And, right.
You know, there are a lot of people who have, I think, a more conservative Christian faith. And I don't know if we're doing a good thing if we're hounding them or making them, you know, just kind of immediately tarring them as bigots. I think, you know, not everyone is going to agree, and that's okay. I don't think that that's the end of the world. And I think with the Sisters for Perpetual Indulgence, it seems like, you know, I get their shtick. I mean, they've been around for decades. It's kind of one of those things of how do you handle that? You know, I guess one of the things I read somewhere is that, you know, a lot of the people, of course, who follow the Dodgers in Los Angeles, you know, most of them tend to be Latino.
Right.
Most of them tend to be Catholic. So how do you handle that? And how do you do that in a way that isn't offensive to Catholics? I don't think that this necessarily means that you can't have Pride Night. Obviously, they had been having Pride Night for years before this. So it feels like we just don't, as a culture anymore, know how to show kind of grace or at least make room for each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like it has to be my way. And if you say anything bad, well, obviously then that's tantamount to, you know, wanting to persecute me or something.
Right. Right. You wrote about this recently, right? Kind of the victimization.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember what the words you use exactly, but it's kind of like this appeal or allure of victimization. So that comes to mind. And I'll kind of guess, if I can name my privilege here as perhaps as, you know, a white male who probably be most easily identified as, you know, cisgender, hetero, whatever. These aren't necessarily topics that directly offend me. So let me preface it. Lay that big preface there down first. You know, that being said, in other contexts, I found myself like knowing that people don't agree with, like, for instance, you know, my family are very conservative, feel, you know, religiously Christian. I know that they don't agree with my theological positions. You know, I've been in church context, more conservative church context, where I know like they don't. So, I mean, it's difficult. I understand, to some extent. I'll preface it by saying on some small level, perhaps. But I think my thought is like, I have to be okay with who I am. And I need to be okay, like, regardless of whether I get external support, then I need to be okay, like, who I am, what I believe, what I'm about. And I think that, you know, I'm kind of getting into this, like, old man phase, right? Get off my lawn. You know, old enough where I'm like, oh, these young kids, young whippersnappers. But I, you know, I think it probably is a good societal thing if we can be okay with, like, who we are. And yeah, like, I don't want to say, like, anger and hatred is something we want to just, like, look the other way at. But also, like, I'm of the opinion, and again, Dennis, like, you can speak this far more than I can, that I think that we need to have space for people to be able to believe what they want. And again, from what I just prefaced earlier, like, I don't know if can someone literally believe, like, someone is, you know, what am I trying to say? The question is it possible to not be affirming, right, and non-hateful? And my thought, again, I could be wrong on this, but my thought is that it's possible to not be affirming and not be a bigoted, hate-filled whatever.
I think so.
And I don't know if societally we have that space, that nuance, right?
Yeah. But, I think you bring something up that does make sense, is that I think for me what's always been important is that I've had to realize that kind of having that internal sense of who you mm-hmm. are.
Right.
You know, and I think especially as a Christian, who I am as a Christian, that
right.
I'm loved and accepted by God, and that the outward stuff, you know, that's important, but you know, it's not the thing that I have to live and die on. And I think I worry sometimes in our culture, and it's not just on this issue, but on a lot of issues, that we feel like everything, we always have to have this external affirmation for everything in our culture. And I just don't think you can live that you can't really have a society that way, because not everyone's always going to be affirming you. And
I mean, if I can jump in and speak to this, because I, like, personally, from another context, like, I'll be really, really real here and say, like, I've really been wrestling with this a lot. Like, I'm in a position where I recently kind of made a big career shift, where I'm working bivocationally now. And part of that was just the realization, like, I'm not going to get, like, my career as a clergy person is not going anywhere. And the reasons for that are varied and complex. And I wish things were different. I really do. I love church. I love working for church. I love doing church. But like paying my bills and getting anywhere where I can support my family in god awful expensive Denver Metro, I needed to make more money. And I just realized through a varied sort of, you know, reasons and situations and nuances that, you know, so it's been hard for me, I guess. There's a family systems theory coach that I follow, and, you know, one of his big things is like, what do you think you need that you really don't need? And like, I think I need, like, you know, a fancy title or a big church or a national recognition or, you know, whatever like a mainliner or pastor might want, you know, a book deal. Like, and I try to remind myself, like, I think I need that, but I don't need that. Like, what I really need is to my family, you know, the love of my family, friends, you know, a resonance, a closeness with God and a trust in God that I can continue to serve God and follow faithfully in whatever context I'm in. So, again, I'm speaking from my context and want to understand that different people are going to feel things different ways. But I do think, to your point, having some kind of internal security, if that makes sense, really can go a long way. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that our culture is not good at, or it seems like, especially now in our culture, we aren't good at nuance. We aren't good at the grays. We're not good at even trying to accommodate for difference.
You know, you've talked in your podcast or on your blogs, kind of defending, not necessarily defending, but kind of taking social media off the hook. And I was thinking about this, you know, and I was thinking about, like, the printing press is looked at as like the pivotal thing in the 1500s. But really, I think, kind of to your point, like, technology isn't, like, technology enables something that's already happening societally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, like, really created this kind of individualistic Bonkersville that we have today. Like, it's enabled it, and it's fed off it. But like would in the 1500s, would Martin Luther be like Instagramming if he had the technology? Like, I don't think so. So it also reminds me of someone we both are, I think, fans of, Andrew Root, and his, I think, what, Church in the Crisis of Decline, talks about the imminent frame and the kind of the cult of individualism. At least those are my words. So I think, like, societally, it's just like a thing of where the individual is the greatest good. Like, I think if I'm remembering, he talks about like the individual being like its own kind of like sanctity, or I can't remember the word. So, you know, if I myself in this kind of like pillar of individuality, of sanctuary, you know, if something within me gets, you know, insulted or diminished, like kind of wrecks me. Whereas if my self-worth and value is not just based on me alone, but it's based on, you know, my relationships with my family, my friends, my faith community, my culture, you know, my trade, you know, if I'm a tradesman, for instance, thinking, you know, back Middle Ages, then it's going to be a lot harder to kind of like diminish. My self-worth is going to be more stable, perhaps.
Yeah, that does, it is something to think about, is how, you know, to kind of continue off of the whole Andrew Root thing and the immanent frame, is that if there isn't anything that's beyond this, any sense mm-hmm. of transcendence, if it's just you, then any kind of slight is
right.
You're going to take it much more personally than
right.
You would if you know that you aren't the end all and be all. Which, frankly, I'm kind of don't want to be the end all and be all, because that's just too much work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just don't think you can live really well. And I worry about that as a society, is that if everything is about us, then that really makes it hard for us to all live together. You know, especially at a time when I think we're far more diverse as a society than we used to be. We have to find ways of how do we reach out to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I know that in some DEI, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion spaces, that kind of difference is, maybe I'll say it this way. I think that there's a real, there's a question right now about like, what is the best way to bring unity? Is it through like really emphasizing diversity, or is it looking for kind of universal common characteristics that we can share? And I think that's a real question. I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out, you know, over these next 5, 10, 15 years, like what is seen as like the best way to bring people together.
There was an article, was written by Connor Friedersdorf, who writes for The Atlantic. I think he wrote it around 2017. It was off of a book about kind of, this was just shortly after Donald Trump became president. And one of the things that he, this book that he wrote the essay on, was that kind of what is kind of might allow for more, I guess, authoritarianism among some people is when you have a culture that highlights difference. When you talk so much about how these people are so different,
yeah,
and how we should really try to understand them and all that, that makes it even worse. That when you, that the way to kind of really kind of defuse any kind of slide or attempts of authoritarianism is to find out what are the things that people have in common or that are similar to them. And I think that there is something to that, because, you know, you're not going to get rid of difference, but if the people, I think, by nature, I think we are somewhat tribal, and that the way that we are able to kind of understand one another has to be through what are the things that we have in common. Because if all we're doing is focusing on the difference, that's just going to highlight the tensions more. And I feel like we're leaning way too much on this whole people are different.
Yeah. So,
Sorry
to cut you off there.
I've been thinking about
that. Like, you know, but think of that as far as language. So I work now, my full-time other job is in, affordable housing. You know, so obviously there's a lot of like, you know, we don't want to call them homeless anymore. We're going to call them unhoused or people experiencing experiencing homelessness, which, you know, I understand again, we don't want to say like you are, you know, we don't want their status to define who they are. Right. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think it can be challenging because really when we think about how far this kind of differentiation can be, it makes communicating really difficult when we can't just look at a person, or look at a context or like a box and say, that's a box. And so it's like, no, that's a shoe box, or we keep having to define the difference. And I think two things can happen is A, it makes communicating effectively to one another really challenging. Cause if we don't have ways to kind of understand universally like that, I don't know. I'm not into geometry. Nope. You know, that's a box that four sides or whatever many sides a box has, right? A cube. That's a box. And also, like, I think to some extent, like, there can kind of just be a fatigue of like, man, I just don't have time for like, I don't have time for all that. You know, I did like a DEI tape training, and I think it recommended like me to commit like 40, 50 hours to like grow. And I was just like, who in the world has 40, 50 hours? Like, I mean, like for those unaware, like Dennis and I are literally recording this immediately after I just put my son to bed. And as soon as we're done, I'm going to go to bed. I mean, that's kind of my day. So I don't know, Dennis, could be wrong on this. And obviously, I think folks disagree, but my thought is at least that, like, you know, I don't want to diminish that people are different and have unique giftings and personalities and differences, but also, like, I feel like there can be this, like, just breakdown of, like, you know, how do we even relate if we're so different, if that makes sense? Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think you talked about an essay I did on victimization, and the starting point was the song Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. And I kind of said, you know, it's kind of a schlocky 80s song. You know, it's very much of that time period of the early 80s, though it's hard to believe it's 41 years old. Which I will not say anything about your age, because I know that it's around your age, which also then says how old I am. but I think what I, as much as it's kind of a schlocky song, there was something meaningful about that song, because it was really trying to talk about how the two people from very different backgrounds, different races, were also, I think it was, as schlocky as it was, I think it was also a song that talked a lot about the commonalities, that even though there were people from different races, from different backgrounds, there was also something that bound them together. And as much as, you know, you just don't hear that as much these days. We don't seem to want to talk about commonalities. We talk more about what makes us different, and you know, in ways that are much more stark, black and white. Mm-hmm. There are these people who are good, and these people who are always bad, and it's just not in a realistic way of looking at things. And I feel like we've kind of lost that willingness to kind of seek out our common humanity.
What do you think then, Dennis, if I can ask a question? You know, we're both clergy, invested in church. You know, what do you think about, like, the future of church, especially in more progressive contexts? Obviously, church has been something that's been guilty of, you know, whitewashing or kind of like making people kind of, what am I trying to say? Making people conform to one dominant culture, which is often a white majority culture. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, to some extent, we need to have some kind of unity or commonality to gather together, which at least I believe is very important in, you know, communities of faith. You know, what do you think about that as far as in church?
Well, it's needed in church, but I worry that church itself is becoming a place where we don't want to really understand difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think there was something I wrote, and I've shared this back in the 90s when a lot of churches, especially a lot of mainline churches, were starting to deal with the issue. And on homosexuality, and churches were voting, and they would take a vote, and usually it would pass. It was interesting that someone would almost always say that that we would have some healing to do, that, you know, the community had been gone through this very hard issue, and we needed to patch things up.
Yeah.
And there was always and in that sentence, there was always the admission that not everyone was on the same page on this. Mm-hmm. And that we have to find ways of trying to reestablish ties, even when we don't agree. And it's funny, over time, I don't hear that phrase anymore. Mm-hmm. And partially because we have so many congregations now where everyone just, and even full denominations, where everyone just agrees. If they do agree or don't agree, they don't say anything or don't feel they can say anything anymore.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, like, in fairness to, like, us on the mainline progressive side, like, Ed Stetzer talks about what he calls a great sort, you know, where people are doing this not just in, you know, they're doing this in right-wing churches. And, mm-hmm. like, there's a story I saw about like Christian nationalism as a church growth strategy, you know, with Charlie Kirk. And I think it is like a concerning trend for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I mean, I think that that's happening all over the place, and it's not just on the left. It's happening on the right too. You know, it's this sense of purity. You know, mm-hmm. I've got to be pure, and everyone else around me has to be pure. And if they're not, they're on the bad side, and I don't want anything to do with them. And that can't be healthy, and that can't be healthy for a culture when you're all basically saying, you know, you can only have the righteous on your side, and That takes us down some dangerous roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I sort of wonder, and I think you retweeted this, you know, something Ryan Burge had shared about, or maybe it was in your article about Ryan Burge, kind of saying, you know, there needs to be some kind of faith space for people who want to hear women preachers, who are affirming of gay marriage, for instance. You know, I sometimes feel, again, as someone who spent like 25 years of my life Baptist, you know, I sometimes feel like I'm a fish out of water in mainline space. And it's because, like, where am I going to go in the evangelical fundamental space where people are going to be like, I'd be like, I remember, just to be super frank, after my church plant ended during COVID times, like, I was really disgruntled with mainline church for reasons beyond what we can talk about here today. And I was attending like an independent Christian church, kind of our restoration siblings, right? And it was a pretty cool church. Like, they were very, like, did a lot of social justice-y stuff, building like affordable housing on their property, you know, a lot of stuff for mental health. I mean, really good stuff in their community, trying to be on the front end of stuff, like in their context. And then, like, you know, they're like, you can belong before you can believe, all that kind of jargon. And then, like, one day I was attending and like the associate pastor gave this message about like basically saying like, hey, if you don't believe the divinity of Christ, like you're like, you know, you're demonic. I was like, well, shoot, I guess I can't attend here because like, I don't know. Like, it's not like I doubt the divinity of Christ every day, but some days I'm like, huh, I don't know. And some days I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't think that matters. But broadly speaking, to your point, like, I don't know. I guess it really depends. Like, we're in this like cultural milieu where, like you said, this kind of not doctrinal purity or political purity or tribalist purity really matters. And if you're not in, like, you're out, and that's the only thing that matters. Not like, you know, because I feel like I could be at a church where they're like, we love God, we worship God, we love our neighbors, like that's what we're about. Like, I feel like I could be a part of the church, whether or not they're like, you know, I think I believe the Bible's a word of God. I'm like, okay, sure, fine, whatever. You know, even if they had very more conservative positions theologically than me, if they're like, hey, Lauren, what we care about is like loving God, loving others, you know, I could be cool with that.
Well, I'm the same way. I mean, I'm, you know, there are probably churches that I probably wouldn't feel comfortable at.
Right.
But I also think that there are churches where I could work with them because
right.
We, at least we can agree on this. And okay, yeah, you may not be so cool about the whole gay thing, but as long as you're not, you know, hating on me, I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm cool with that. But we kind of don't give people enough grace, and we don't believe enough in things like persuasion and even just patience with one another anymore to really kind of go with the flow. I think it's just, we're so unsure of each ourselves and worried, you know, that if we don't believe in something 150%, then it's everything is bad. And I don't know.
Well, I think it goes back to, if I can bring this back to our original point about nuance. Like, I know how I changed my beliefs. Like, I know how my opinion changed. It wasn't from someone yelling at my face. It wasn't from someone telling me that I'm an idiot. It wasn't from someone screaming at me on social media. Like, again, I'm a big family systems guy. So, again, this family systems guy I follow talks about, like, you can't change someone who's moving away from you. Like, there's nothing you say that's going to bring them closer to you if they're, you know, if they're moving away, they're, you know, only who's someone who's moving towards you can you hope to have some influence on. And again, you're not going to get, someone's not going to start moving towards you by you being a jerk to them or yelling at them, or to go back to our, you know, beginning conversation, telling them they're, you know, bigoted, hateful person. Like, that's not going to bring about change. And I believe that change is possible. You know, I'm a person who's changed drastically in a lot of my, beliefs and values, you know, from 15, 20 years ago. So I believe change is possible. I believe in the power of the work of the Holy Spirit, I guess, if I can be that bold, to bring about change in people's lives. And also believe in the importance of us as followers of Jesus, of discipling people. And again, I think that kind of mystery of how that all happens, that's why I like the visualization of like, change can only happen when someone's coming, moving closer to you. And I think some of that is going to take some work on our part. And I'm going to use a big universal we here. Those on the left side or on the mainline progressive side, whatever side we're a part of, I guess, to be comfortable with some discomfort of, you know, this person kind of rubs me the wrong way sometimes, but I don't, you know, but they're moving towards me. They're showing some interest and some reasonality, respectability. Again, like, I'm not saying, like, if someone's being a jerk to you, you just need to, like, take the bullets and take the arrows. Like, I've done that for too long and I'm tired of doing that.
No, that's what we call abuse, and that's a different thing.
But I do think, like, if someone's like, you know, hey, I'm kind of curious, or I have some questions, like, that's an opening, perhaps an opening by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just feel like we have to find better ways of reaching out and being willing to kind of talk to one another and not always be so afraid of each other either. And I think, and I think that's actually what it boils down to sometimes. I think we're afraid of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe afraid, maybe conversely, or also, Dennis, going back to our kind of individualistic nature, maybe we're afraid that, you know, if I open myself up to you, Dennis, and you insult me, like, am I secure enough in myself to say, you know what, man, what Dennis said was freaking mean, but whatever, like, Dennis is a jerk, or Dennis is having a bad day, or whatever Dennis said, I can get over it because I know who I am. Again, not to say that's easy.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of learning to kind of accept that there's going to be some uncomfortableness. So there's going to be some times when things are just not going to work out. But I think that life is going to be uncomfortable at times. And if we think that life is always going to work out and that you never have to worry about anything, doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So I want to actually, with some of the time we have left, quickly move on to the other thing that I wanted to talk about a little, is the what happened with the Southern Baptists a few weeks ago. And for those who don't know, they decided to, I don't know if I want to say effectively, or they basically decided to kick out Saddleback Church in California and some other churches that were also that had women in pastoral roles. But this has also put a lot of other congregations kind of in a no man's land, because they have people in roles of women that are in pastoral roles, and they don't know what that means. And so I kind of was curious what you're thinking about that. It's been interesting to watch, and especially interesting to see from Rick Warren's perspective, his really engaging scripture, being willing to change his mind on that issue. And then also how some of the people who are there are steadfast in their belief against it, really to the point of kicking out churches.
Right. I mean, I don't know. This is where I question how liberal I am. And then I realize, boy, I must be pretty liberal, because I just don't understand how you could be like, this is the issue. Boy, this is the issue. Women pastors, we're just going to, you know, in or out based on women pastors. I mean, I remember several years ago, my youth pastor came back into town at an event, and it was a conservative Baptist event, because he was and still is very conservative. And I remember saying something to the congregation, as a youth gathering, saying something to the youth there, like, hey, some of you, like I was 20 years ago, are going to come out of this and become youth pastors. And I realized as I said that, that I was saying that where only the boys, the young men, could become clergy. And I was kind of sad in my heart then for those young women. So I, you know, again, this is something that, again, from my sex and my gender, that I can't totally relate and understand to women. So I guess like my only thought was like, is like, man, I'm sorry. Y'all have had to put up with that garbage, and just like affirm, just want to affirm you like in the gifts that you have and affirm the calling that you believe you receive from God. I will say like from myself, you know, I know there's been times myself where, you know, people have, diminished or dismissed, like, you know, my calling. And from my experience, I know it's been hard. So I can really only imagine, you know, what it's been like for some of y'all. And so just, you know, want to encourage you if I can in any way of being like, stay at it.
Why do you think that there have been people that they've made this really literally a confessional issue, that
yeah,
this is the way that it has to be, which I mean relates to our earlier talk of mm-hmm. of how things have right. to be, that there's no space right. for nuance, no yeah. space of
yeah, it just, it's weird, isn't it? I can't understand it. Like, I can't understand, like, I mean, I frankly don't get how people are like, you know, you have to, the exclusivity of Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation. Like, that's a point of division amongst faith. And like, that's one thing where I just don't get, like, boy, we're so insecure in our faith that we have to like believe God is sending everyone else to hell. Like, you know, that's another thing where I'm just like, I just don't get it. And I'll just acknowledge kind of my own difference of opinion there, that I just don't get how, you know, acknowledging women in ministry. I guess if I'm being a little bit more rational, obviously goes to a very traditional conservative, literalist reading of scripture. And, you know, it is a bit of a slippery slope there. You know, I hate like the slippery slope analogy kind of as a logical fallacy to some extent, but also get like, you know, conservative, again, speaking as someone who's fundamentalist, like that thing is kind of wound up so tight, if I may, like if you start to pull up some strings, like the whole thing can unravel, if that makes sense. So I do wonder if there's some of that involved, like there's this realization, like, you know, like, you know, the Genesis creation story, like, we have to be like 6 days or else the whole thing might unravel, you know, that kind of thing. Like, we have to think that women can't be pastors because there's this text in, was it Timothy or whatever? I can't remember, you know? And if we start to allow any nuance there, the whole thing might unravel.
Yeah. I, you know, there is something somewhere where, cause I was actually preaching a little bit on this weekend. And one of the reasonings, believe it or not, for this is the belief or the fear that if you allow women in ministry, that will lead to gays mm-hmm. in ministry. And I'm like,
God forbid, right?
Okay. So, yeah. I kind of thought they're going, well, okay, I guess since I'm in ministry, you know, I guess it's true, but
yeah, right,
you know, it's also not the end of the world, but okay, you know,
yeah, I mean, that's why I don't like the slippery slope argument as like a rational argument, because I think we can just kind of say, well, where does it stop? Well, it stops right there. That's where we say it stops. I don't like that societally, even though I get there's some tendency to it, but I think human beings can be rational at times to say like, hey, let's stop it right there. so to speak, whatever kind of trend or change is going to be.
I guess the thing is though, it's, and I understand there are traditions that they have very different mm-hmm. understandings on ministry and all that. But I also feel even in those traditions, there is some room made in some ways, and that this is kind of not making room. And it's personally, I feel like it's kind of stopping the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe to say it this way, I guess, I mean, the patriarchy is strong, right? There are, especially in those contexts, there are systems, really strong systems set up to keep things one way, where, you know, the man is the head of the household, and as much as I think it's preposterous, I can kind of see why there's such rigid resistance to it, because it really would in some ways upset the entire apple cart, I think. And maybe that's why, you know, again, as a male, I don't have to, so have to deal with those things.
I know that I want to, because I know you wanted to hold you to a certain time. So, but I think one final question just on this is that, you know, how do you think that this is going to affect the Southern Baptists many years to come?
I mean, it's bizarre. I remember when I was a kid, Dennis, because it wasn't the late 80s where they had their kind of liberal, was it the late 80s or early 90s? They had their kind of like liberal split off where like they rejected the liberals.
Late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember my dad telling me about like how that was a good thing. Again, grew up in a conservative context. And I think there was this kind of really like, they seemed to kind of rejuvenate from that. You know, if you look kind of perhaps at the trends, you know, that didn't affect them at all. But again, to our broader trend, we've been talking about this throughout this of like this kind of splintering. I don't know. I could be wrong here. Could be wrong, but I, you know, maybe let me say it this way. We were talking about sports at the beginning.
Yeah.
One of the critiques of baseball, Major League Baseball, is that it's like a regional sport, you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers, whereas like the NFL just seems to like be huge everywhere, like regardless of the part of the country. I think in some ways, like church and denominations are going to kind of become like regional, like the SBC is going to be huge in like, you know, the Sun Belt probably. And we really already see this to some extent, like, you know, the SBC is good in Texas and the Sun Belt, you know, liberal congregations are doing okay in, okay is whatever, you know, liberal congregations are more likely to be up on the coast, for instance. So that's what I sort of wonder, like, is American Christianity really going to become like regionalized, based on the demographics of those areas?
Well, time will tell. That sounds like a topic for another episode at another time. So, Lauren, thank you for joining me as we talk about these events, and hope to have you back on soon, kind of talk about what's going on in the news.
Sure.
All right. Take care. I hope that the discussion with Lauren was engaging, And again, you can follow him on his Future Christian podcast. The link is in the description. If you're interested in leaving, please consider leaving a podcast review. You can do that on your favorite podcast app. Also, consider subscribing to Church in Maine, and you can do that by going to churchinmaine.substack.com. So there are more interviews coming up in the next few weeks, and so stay tuned for those upcoming episodes. That is it for episode 149 of Church in Maine, the podcast that is at the intersection of faith and modern life. I'm Dennis Sanders, your host. Take care, Godspeed, and I will see you very soon. Thank you.